Blog Talk Radio.
And now it's time for Crystal Clear Coaching with Maggie Holbert. Join Maggie every Wednesday at 11 a.m. Central, 12 noon Eastern, for an hour of positive reinforcement on Greater Good Ministries Radio. And now, here's Maggie.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the show. I'm so happy to have you listening in today. This is Maggie Holbick of Crystal Clear Coaching Blog Talk Radio. And our website is www.blogtalkradio.com/GGM Radio, which stands for Greater Good Ministries. So I'm very, very, very happy to have my guest on today. Her name is Katrina Boss. And how I met Katrina was through a lifelong, well, not a lifelong, but a recent endeavor that I chose to experience, and that was to see Anita Morjani, who wrote the book Dying to Be Me. And it turns out she was in Blythe, Ontario, of all places, and I made the trip down, and my sister and I from Toronto took the drive. It was lovely. It was a beautiful spring day, and we went to see Anita, and that's where I met Katrina, who was downstairs with her book, What If You Could Skip the Cancer. So I met Katrina, we touched base, we talked about maybe being on the show. I got the book, brought it home, and I read it on the way home, on the airplane, anywhere I could get my hands. I couldn't put it down, actually. And it's just an amazing book, and I recommend it to everyone. I have mine, has notes and underlines, and I have notes in other books about it. I'm using the information with my coaching clients, but I just think it's a fantastic story that can help many people if it's meant to resonate with them. So I'm going to bring Katrina on. Katrina, are you there?
I'm here, yep.
Hey, welcome to the show.
Yay.
I'm so glad to have you here. And, you know, for our listeners, maybe we can just give a little overview of you know, you came through breast cancer. It, you know, it ran in your family, and we, you know, we're going to talk about some of that today, but more so, I think the message of what kinds of tools and steps and energetic ways of living that we can take that might not set us up to illness so much. And there's so many good gems, and you and I kind of covered some, but why don't you give a little intro of yourself in your own words so we can get started on that.
Okay. Well, the one thing when you were just talking about one of the reasons I actually initially wrote the book, you know, it's my family all, there's a lot of breast cancer in my family. I'm 43 and I'm one of the oldest women in my family, you know, so it's a really big deal in our family. And when I got sick 13 years ago, and it was a really big deal to go a different route. You know, lots of people do medicine and it's all good, but for our family, obviously, it hadn't worked. And so I went this other way, and that really went into what was really going on inside, emotionally, mentally, spiritually. What's the other big piece besides the physical part? And, you know, I had this miraculous healing and all that, and I kind of left it alone for quite a while. I didn't know what to say. I didn't know how to explain it to people. I didn't know how to share it. And then there were all of these stories coming out about women who were having radical mastectomies, who didn't even have cancer. They didn't even have it, didn't even run in their family. But the fear of cancer was so acute in them, they were actually removing their breasts just in case it would ever happen. And when I was, when my mom had died, my aunt, who had died when I was very young, my mom's sister, her daughters, she has three daughters, they actually approached me and my sisters and said, you know what, this is enough. We've lost enough women to this disease. Why don't the six of us all go and have our breasts removed? And I was mortified. I was 21. My sisters were 19 and 17. And I thought, there's no way. And so we didn't end up doing it. But the fear of cancer is so massive, and it's just endemic. And, you know, and we just heard recently, you know, about Angelina Jolie doing the same thing, which has a huge ripple effect into people. And so that really got me going. And my sisters and I, we all have daughters. Like, this sort of, you know, generational cancer thing is just, it's just no good. And so it really prompted me to get doing the research and get studying why, what's the other part? You know, we're very, very interesting, complex beings. We're not just lumps of flesh that sometimes have issues. We are, we have emotions and thoughts and beliefs and hopes and dreams, and we're very spiritual beings. We're this huge piece. And right now, cancer research and the whole focus on cancer and the fear of cancer is looking at this minuscule aspect of who we are. It's just basically looking at us like a meat sack and saying, this is all we can do, so let's cut it, burn it, do whatever. And sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But when it doesn't, that's when we really have to look at, you know, let's look at the whole other piece. And for me, when that happened, when I had the experience, it really gave me hope that there was something else. And that's when I did start looking into a lot of more of that mind-body connection and understanding that we're not just flesh. Our emotions matter, and we know this. I mean, we can just think about, you know, this one guy, this doctor got up at a big conference one day, and he said, if any of you doctors don't think that emotions affect our physical well-being, listen to this. And he sat there, and he read this passage from Lady Chatterley's Lover, and it was really, you know, provocative and whatever. And by the end of the reading, he stopped, and he goes, is anybody having a physical reaction to this? And of course, there was no one could say they didn't, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting to hear that, but it's another thing to actually go, no, it's real. You know, the mm-hmm. things that we experience every day, the disappointments that we just bury, the hopes that we just give up on, the depression that we say, oh, well, it's not that bad, and I just have to look at the bright side. When we're depressed, when we're sad, when we have these things going on in our life, they have to affect our physical being. They have to, because it's all connected. It's mm-hmm. not, we're not separate. We're not a body that's animated by a spirit that's separate. You know, it's that Einsteinian thing that says, you know, that we are actually matter and energy, it's all the same. It's just different aspects. So what's happening in our mind and our emotions and our spirit and our thoughts is manifesting as our body. It's exactly the same thing. And so that was what was really exciting when I did the research to write the book, was to say, this is not just flaky stuff. This is real. We all know there's a connection. And imagine if we can actually help, you know, things like hereditary yeah. issues like cancer and that kind of thing. So
you know what,
sort of been
and I want to read your quote, if you don't mind. You just sparked that when you talked about the depression, you know, the quiet depression, and this is a quote from you.
Mm-hmm.
Depression leads to despair. This despair comes from a lifetime of not feeling they could honor their truths. It comes from constantly doing things to make other people happy, trying to live up to other people's expectations, and always putting others ahead of themselves. And I know we'll get into that later, but just, you know, for our listeners to realize how important that is. It, you know, a lot of people have that underlying depression. Like you, I think you mentioned in the book that you didn't even realize that you were depressed.
We're taught to look at the bright side. You know, and especially as women, and lots of men do this, but I'm a woman, so I only have the women's perspective really intrinsically. But as women, we are the natural peacekeepers. We are the ones that are supposed to take care of the tribe, because the men are out, you know, killing brontosauruses and stuff, you know. So the women have to, at a very primal level, we have to keep the peace. We have to keep everybody happy. So it's not that that's wrong, but the problem is what it means is we have to always look at the good side and the bright side. And, you know, it's kind of like, well, you know, maybe my kid doesn't have a job, but at least he's not out doing drugs. You know, we have this thing that we always have to look at the bright side, which is fine, except that when we're actually spending 90% of our days looking at the bright side, because our life actually sucks. You know, our bar for happiness has become really low. You know, it's sort of that, you know, I've heard people say, well, my marriage is okay. I mean, my husband doesn't beat me. He doesn't go out drinking with the boys. He's not fooling around. I mean, what do I have to complain about? Like, that's a terrible way of assessing whether you have a good marriage. You know what I mean? Like, what if we start with, it's a good marriage, And it gets better from there. You know, it's the same with our life. We say, oh, how can I complain? I've got food on the table. I've got a roof over my head. I live in Canada. It's, you know, how can I possibly complain just because maybe this isn't being satisfied? Why can't that be satisfied? Why can't we reach for the stars? Why can't we have an interesting and adventurous, exciting life that stimulates us and makes us excited to get up in the morning? Who said we can't do that? And that's where the despair and the depression and all that kind of thing comes from, because we're so busy looking at the silver lining, trying to convince ourselves that our life is just fine, we're just being selfish, we're wanting too much, we're just, you know, sorry, I had a rude thing come in my head there that I can't say out loud. We're like, you know, reaching above our britches or whatever you want to call it. But, you know, it's very strange how we've come to this place where we don't believe we actually should have a really exciting life.
Yeah, we settle.
And so
we
just settle. And then when we settle, we look at the bright side. And that's what I did for years. I didn't know I was doing it because, you know, we had a dairy farm. We don't have a dairy farm anymore. I grew up in the city. I fell in love with a farmer. I moved to the middle of nowhere. As far as I was concerned, this is it. So you make the best of it. That's what we do. We're survivors. We just make the best of it. And we look at the bright side and all that. But the truth was, I was absolutely dying inside. I needed more. Now in hindsight, 20 years later, I look back and I realize, like, I needed more social interaction. I needed to kind of break the mold of how even marriage could look, because I just fell right into that. I'm a farm wife. This is the only way it works on the farm, and pardon me, and that's it. But what if I was more creative? What if I had said, well, actually, you know what, maybe I can still do some traveling, and I can do some teaching, and I can do this and that. It's not typical farm wife stuff, and he'll have to find someone else to feed the calves. But I didn't even imagine that, because this is the way it's done. You just solve it. You look on the bright side, and you just make it happen.
You know, it reminds me of how we, you know, the old using the good china. I think we do that with our lives. We, for some reason, feel we have to hold back, and then maybe it's someday we're going to follow our dreams, or someday we're going to go after what we really want, or someday I'll get to live my life after the kids are gone, blah, 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 blah. And it's almost that energy of it where you're saving it for good, and good is now.
Well, and the really crappy thing about that is by the time you wait for the kids to have grown up and be gone, you've forgotten whatever you ever liked. You know, I mean, the number of people who come to me for counseling or to do yoga or to talk or to do group work or whatever, and I'll say, you know, you want to follow your dreams and you want to follow your passions and blah, blah, blah. And 9 times out of 10, they look at me, and I mean, I have the same problem a lot of times. They look at me and they go, but how do you figure out what those are? We have no idea. We've lost so, like, it's like that connection to our passion has atrophied. It just disappears. And, you know, that's really, really hard. And it's interesting, too. Like, my kids now are 15 and 18. And it's, imagine, I can't even imagine wishing these last few years away, waiting for me to be able to start my life because my kids are gone. You know what I mean? These are great years with the kids at home. And to think, you know, how do I do that now? How do I follow the passions now? How do I be excited to wake up every morning because I'm just so excited about my life and what I'm doing and the people and the interactions and, you know, I don't know.
I do a lot of that in my life coaching with helping people to remember what brings you joy. Use the joy meter, no matter what you do. And I think you have it in the lift and drop. You know, does this lift? And I want to talk about that, but I use a joy meter. Does this bring me joy? You know, a friend phones you to go for lunch. Does it bring me joy, or do you have a feeling of dread? You instantly know, but we stop listening to this. And it's interesting. I saw a post on Facebook earlier. Someone was expressing, you know, they waited for their kids to grow up, and they were all excited that they were going to go out and live their life, and now it's happened, and they're, like, in a mess, and they're anxious, and they don't know what to do. And I think that happens from like you said, from not – hearing that inner voice and not really knowing what our passions are and what we bury them. And I actually like to look at that experience more as breaking through to who you are. And when you get that unsettled feeling, it's prompting you to listen and to go for what you do desire. Would you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely. It's like, and what's interesting is if you imagine that we each have a path, like whatever that is, it doesn't have to be static and all that kind of thing, but if we each have an individual path, my experience is that when I'm on path, life is easy. It just flows. Serendipity happens. People show up at just the right time. And it's not that you don't work. It's not that you don't put any effort in. But the effort is also joyful. Like you enjoy every step of it. You know, it's, and granted, this is easy for me to say because I'm not washing diapers and stuff right now in my life either. I remember when my kids were little and a friend of mine said to me, she said, I'm doing an experiment with the universe. And she said, I'm only doing things that bring me joy. And at this point, I had, my kids were in diapers. Both of them were in diapers. I had foster kids. I had, and I'm just like, I don't do anything that brings me joy. Everything I do is an obligation. It's a job. It's part of raising kids. It's part of keeping a home. It's part of, I don't even know what you're talking about. I don't have that freedom right now. In hindsight, I would have changed things. But, you know, knowing if I knew then what I know now, but sorry, someone just walked in, so I just lost my train of thought.
In hindsight, looking back at
And that's what I was going to say. The interesting thing about kind of being on your path is, you know, you talked about the joy meter. Like sometimes we've got this weird idea that if something comes up to do and we're excited to do it, that's not important, that it's just, oh, well, you're just happy to do it. Or if you don't want to do it, oh, you're just making excuses, or you're just lazy, or you're just irresponsible, or you're something else. It's just some weird function of our brain. But the idea that if you're excited to do it is actually connected to your soul, or it's connected to your heart, or your path, or your spiritual journey, that's actually a sign that says, no, this is the path. Like that feeling of joy is the feeling of ease. It's the feeling of being in the flow, as opposed to when someone says, would you like to do this? And you feel this dread in your heart or your heart drops, that's actually, that energy or whatever in the body is actually a sign that says, no, off path. This is not what you're meant to do.
That's your lift and drop, right?
Yep. Yeah, if someone says something and your heart, you know, because it happens all the time. Someone calls and someone says, hey, do you want to do this? And your heart lifts. It just goes, oh, yeah, that'd be great. Or your heart drops. And if you're a pleaser, like all of us, we start to think, okay, how am I going to get out of this? Or what can I tell them? And that it's not trivial that our heart lifts or drops, that it's actually really important, that this is actually how we navigate our path, that when we're following joy, you know what I mean? It's really important.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's not just, oh, I just really want to do this today, or I don't want to do it. It's not. It's not light. It's,
and you know,
huge.
I see that with life coaching, life purpose coaching, people, and even in myself, that what really is our calling or our passion comes so naturally to us that we don't identify it as our purpose. For example, I know every time I get inspired about something, I'll be talking to my husband, and I'm coming up with a new motivating thought or inspiration, and I'll say, I got to write about that. And I've been saying that for years. Now I'm finally getting it. I meant to write. But how long has it taken me? Because you just push that down. We don't listen to that voice. We don't listen to the heart lift. And because we take it for granted because it's so real. It is such a part of us, but we're not listening. And I see it with friends. They might have, you know, amazing talents. Maybe it's in an art or a craft or in sewing. And because it's so natural to them, they can't even see it as a calling sometimes.
No, that's exactly true. Because the things that, like, is even silly things like being a good listener, right? A lot of women are great listeners. But we go, yeah, whatever. And it's like, no. Do you know how important that is? Like, it's a huge deal. Like, we're so trained right through school. I mean, we're really trained in that left brain world that says, well, anything that's marketable that you can make money at, then that's valuable.
Right.
Anything anything that isn't marketable, then, you know, that's not important. It doesn't matter. It's not interesting. And unfortunately, a lot of our feminine gifts, for example, are not like that. They are the ability to listen. They are the ability to be empathic. They are the ability to be intuitive and understand things that other people don't understand and see the big picture. And so because, you know, we can't put it on our resume, we go, oh, no. It's not that important. But it really is important, and we don't value it at all.
Right. Now, speaking of that left brain, you came from a math background. I don't think we've mentioned this. Just for our listeners to know a little bit, you know, you came from a real analytical place, and this whole journey of opening up to the spiritual side and our emotional side, it must have been a big shift for you.
Well, and it's really interesting. Like, when I was in school, I did really well in school, in both sides, like in English and math, and like in both sides. I was never artistic by a long shot, but I definitely I could do both bits. And it was interesting because when I was in high school, I was going to go and study languages and travel the world and, you know, do this kind of thing. And then one of my teachers got a hold of me because I was really super, you know, brainiac in math. And she said, no, you've got to do math and you've got to become an actuary, which is hysterical, right? Because actuaries, one of the things they do is they work for insurance companies and they calculate the likelihood of someone dying based on their lifestyle and all this kind of thing.
Wow.
Oh, it's so morbid and nasty. But I did it anyway. Like, here's me pleasing my calculus teacher, right? And so I decided to go to Waterloo, and I got a math degree. And the interesting thing about math, though, is when you study mathematics, like, not after, once you get to university, you're not studying arithmetic anymore. You're not, people say that to me all the time. Okay, like, add these five numbers really, really fast. And it's like, no, it's not that kind of thing. But the interesting thing about mathematics is mathematics, once you get into the higher levels, is a philosophy, right? Mathematics is actually figuring out how to map the world, right? How do you, Pythagoras and all the great mathematicians, their whole thing was the world is not chaotic. The world can actually be mapped mathematically. There is a system. We just don't understand it yet. So they spent their entire lifetimes trying to figure out how the world worked and how could it be mapped through numbers. And that was fascinating. And that's where like the high-level mathematics was so intriguing to me because, and even things like calculus, to think that you can actually repeatedly calculate random, bizarre things in the world mathematically, it's like it put something in my belief system that says, you know what, there's something much bigger going on here. This is not just, you know, bumbling atoms banging into each other, randomly forming trees once in a while. There's actually something really interesting going on. We just don't understand it. And so when I was studying math, I also studied a lot of psychology, a lot of philosophy, a lot of spiritual studies. And interestingly enough to me, they all blended together. But the problem is that mathematical side, that left brain side that we are trained so well in school, that gets us into so much trouble in our life because we believe we can figure anything out with our brain, right? And that's where I would get into trouble because, and I think most of us do, something comes up and we think, this is the most logical course of action. This is the best thing I can do. Here's, you know, we make pros and cons list, which is hysterical, right? Because we basically make a pros and cons list, and when it doesn't agree with what we really want to do, we sit there and make whatever side longer until it agrees with what we already really want it to prove to us, right?
Which is build a case for anything.
We can build a case for anything.
Yeah, we can.
We can. And that's what's interesting is that left brain, the hard thing with the left brain, too, is it also gets us in trouble with other people. Because if we choose to do something, see, one of the problems with being a people pleaser is it comes in line with that we all have to kind of be the same. you know, there's sort of this cookie cutter model of what a good mom is and a good wife and a good friend and a good daughter and a good father and a good mother and all this kind of thing, that we sort of have to fit that within a certain boundary or else we're a bad mother, you know, or we're not irresponsible or we don't care or we're, you know, we're not a good citizen or something. It doesn't allow for us to actually be unique and eccentric and interesting.
You know, our authentic selves. That's the word that encompasses all of that for me.
Yeah, and I was reading this book called Give and Take, and he was talking about this professor in the States, Skendler or something, and they had this like sub note at the bottom, and it said that this guy was so interesting that he had something like 700 pairs of suspenders that he had alphabetized and organized in his drawers. He wore a bow tie every Monday, Thursday, and Sunday for 40 years, no matter what he was doing. He lay his clothes out 2 weeks ahead of time, like his
wow.
whole life. Like, and I mean, that's not my version of eccentricity, but it's his. And I remember reading that thinking, can you imagine having the freedom to be as truly eccentric as you actually were? Right? Because that's when, I think, that's when our genius actually comes out. You know, when we actually live a life that's truly as eccentric as we are, everything flows. But as soon as we are always trying to fit into this cookie-cutter model of some flavor, we're always cutting off our wings a little, you know, because, oh, that's not acceptable, and, oh, I shouldn't be like that, and I just realized I can't remember the question. I went off on a tangent.
No, that's okay. No, that's how that we go with the show. It flows. I think you are on. You know, I'm gonna do something I can't believe I'm gonna do, but
okay.
it reminds me of what you're talking about. My daughter is 7, Savannah, and I have this little jingle I made up. So we've been singing it lately and giggling and laughing. But I'm gonna sing it because here it is. The older I get, the crazier I get. The older I get, the crazier I get. And it just puts me into that place of exactly what you just summed up. Just being our eccentric self, our unique self, our authentic self, let it out. And you know, I know Anita Morjani talks in her book about, you know, that she believes that was a lot of the cause of her cancer, was that she was always living to please others, not being her authentic self, not really expressing her, letting your own. And I see it energetically, Katrina. I see it when you talked about depression and you know, that we're suppressing. We're suppressing our souls. We're suppressing ourselves. And all we need to do is take the darn lid off and let it out. Let speak our truth from the cellular level. And I such freedom in that, isn't there? Are you there? Well, this is a great time. I think we'll take a commercial break. Just for our listeners, to let us know that you're on Blog Talk Radio with Maggie Holbrook and my guest Katrina Boss, who must have fallen off. I'm sure she'll call back in a minute.
No, I'm back now.
Oh, you're back.
I'm back.
My song,
I don't know what
my
happened.
My song
there.
Threw you for a loop there.
No, I don't know. All of a sudden I had a dial tone. I went, oh, that's weird.
Oh, okay. The universe didn't want you to be on at that time. So we're going to take a commercial break in just about a minute. And for our listeners, if you would like to call in with questions for Katrina or myself, the call-in number is 347-237-5339. We'd be more than happy to have your questions. And Katrina's website is Katrina Boss, so it's KatrinaBoss.ca or .com, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And also EastStreetStation.ca, and that's where you have what you do, Kundalini yoga, meditation. You teach meditation?
I teach meditation and yoga, and we actually have online classes and all kinds
wow,
of things.
Wow, online classes.
People at a distance. Yeah.
Excellent. So make sure, everyone, that you check out her site, and we'll see you when we get back from our commercial break.
Cool.
Hello, everyone. B. Delosier here with a rundown of GGM Radio's brand new schedule. Boy, have we got some wonderful new programs with great new hosts. A little something for everyone. On Mondays at 11 a.m. Central, it's Messages of Light with Amanda Dowell for an hour of psychic chat and inspirational guests. Mondays at 7 p.m. Central, it's time for Primarily Paranormal with psychic Tina Marie. Share an hour with Tina and Bob Weber of Gulf Coast Paranormal. On the second and fourth Tuesday of every month at 8 p.m. Central, it's the Back to Brilliance Hour with Lynn Hoft and Vivian Hildebrand, an hour devoted to your spiritual growth. Wednesdays start at 11 a.m. Central with Maggie Holbeck and Crystal Clear Coaching, featuring motivational inspiration to get your life back on track. At 1 p.m. Central, join Claudia Cleary on Wednesdays with Namaste Nutrition for an hour of soothing chat all about good health, positivity, and spiritual balance. Thursdays, start your day at 9 a.m. Central with Nancy Murdoch and Mastering the Art of Joyfulness. Let Nancy and her special guests lift you out of that rut and get you back in your groove. At 8 p.m. Central, join Dr. Gregory Scott for the Light Giver Universal Healer Hour. Gregory offers spiritual education to further you along your path to enlightenment and empowerment. Fridays at 12 noon Central, it's Alive to Thrive with Brenda Fraser. Join Brenda for an hour of inspiration and motivation, featuring a lineup of today's most popular authors and guests. Friday night at 7 p.m. Central, enjoy an hour of psychic chat with spot-on reader Tasha Harris and the Angels Network. Saturdays begin at noon Central with Bea Delosier, yours truly, and the Metaphysical Edge for psychic chat and interesting guests ranging from UFO research, paranormal experiencers, and all things metaphysical. At 2 p.m. Central on Saturday, it's Audrey Quinn and My Beauty Angel, an hour created just for you with tips and tricks on how to be the best you can be with what God has given you. Sunday is a day of service here on Greater Good Ministries Radio, each week featuring a different interfaith minister bringing joy, upliftment, and unfoldment for body, mind, and spirit. First Sunday of the month is Conversations Beyond the Edge with Dr. Gregory Scott. The second Sunday of the month is the Empowerment Hour with Reverend Barbara B. Delosier. Third Sunday of the month is the Light Givers International Sunday Service and Worldwide Source a Nation Celebration. The fourth Sunday of the month is In His Presence with Evangelist Patricia Benneman. Hope you will join us live for all of our Greater Good Ministries radio programs, but if you can't be with us in person, you can hear any of our programs on demand in archives at www.blogtalkradio.com/ggmradio. And remember, all of our programs now stream live from our home site, www.ggmradio.com. Wishing...
You know that the ice cream scoop can make a child smile, and that by slowing us down, the traffic light can keep us going. You know that the lawnmower makes life easier, that the blood bank makes life possible. But did you know all these ideas came from the minds of African Americans? Support the United Negro College Fund, because a mind is a terrible thing to waste. Visit uncf.org or call 1-800-332-UNCF. Brought to you by UNCF.
We're open for business. The Greater Good Ministries Book and Gift Shop is now open for business, featuring metaphysical and uplifting books from your favorite authors, such as Doreen Virtue, Wayne Dyer, Michael Edward Owens. We've added handcrafted one-of-a-kind jewelry, pendants, earrings, and bracelets, and now have an exclusive selection of crystals, rocks, and stones for your metaphysical toolbox. Take a look at our hand-dug Arkansas crystals, imported Brazilian crystals, Tibetan crystals, and Reiki healing stones. All of our rocks, crystals, and stones have been Reiki infused, blessed, and cleared, ready for use. You can reserve your copy of Crystal Healing 2012 and Beyond, Reverend B's new book, A Comprehensive Guide of Rocks,
crystals and stones for the new age. Visit ggmradio.com and click bookshop in the menu bar. That's ggmradio.com.
You're listening to Maggie Holbert and Crystal Clear Coaching on Greater Good Ministries Radio. And now, back to Maggie.
We're back. Welcome back, everyone. It's Maggie here, and I'm really enjoying spending time with Katrina Boss today, the author of the book, What If You Could Skip the Cancer? And I think it's an important message for everyone. We were talking so far about, you know, listening to our authentic selves, remembering what we want in life, what our passions are, what our dreams are, and not burying those, and really, you know, getting connected to that side of us that is the spiritual side, the side with emotions, and that inner side, rather than our analytical sort of go through life and follow all the rules and what we think we should do for other people and et cetera. So one of the things I wanted to mention before we go on, Katrina, are you back with us?
I am. Yep.
Great. One of the messages I really wanted to have for our listeners today was that, you know, spontaneous healing. I've done a lot of research. I know you have. You've experienced it. One of the things is that I believe if we can't bring something into our awareness, if we can't believe it's possible, we can't make it possible. So I think it's really important for our listeners to know that healing and natural healing and spontaneous healing, it does happen. It's like, you know, Anita, who I talk about often, but she had stage 4 lymphoma and, you know, is here cancer-free and you know, spreading her messages after her near-death experience around the world. And that's a huge one. She was not expected to last the night. She was in a coma. I recently read, and I want to share one little story. I recently read Deepak Chopra's book, Creating Health, which I had never even come across. It's an old book. I don't know if you've ever seen it, Katrina.
No, I've never seen it either.
Yeah, it's called Beyond Prevention and Toward Perfection. And it's when he was actually practicing as a medical doctor in New York. So it was before he sort of got on more of a spiritual journey. But it is there's some good gems in there. And one of the stories he shares is that he had a patient who had came to him for gallstones to have, or their gallbladder removed. And when they went in, they opened her up, she was loaded with cancer, and it had spread to the liver, the stomach. They just closed her up, and, you know, they didn't expect her to live very long at all, but the family did not want the woman to know because they knew it would devastate her. So they just told her that the surgery went well, and then that was the way of it. Well, this woman, at the writing of the book, was still alive, picture of health, and goes to see the doctor and says, you know, I have to tell you, when I came here years ago for that surgery, to have my gallbladder removed, I really thought I had cancer. But when you told me it was just my gallstones or gall, whatever it was, I said, wow, I've been given another chance. I'm going to make a point of being never being sick again, or being as healthy as I can, or what have you. And he really talks about how it's the diagnosis that's killing a lot of people and not the diseases. And he's got some great examples in that book. So can you share anything on that from what you went through?
Well, again, the hard thing with the diagnosis is, I mean, cancer, if you just think about what is actually happening in the physical cells, all cancer means is that for some reason, like cells naturally replicate, the immune system, you know, they die off, the immune system controls the growth pattern of cancer, of cells, right? And at some point, for some reason, sometimes that growth goes unchecked. Like, essentially, that's what's happening. The cells are just simply going unchecked for some reason. But no one really knows why. It can happen from 1,000 different for 1,000 different reasons. But the problem is, as soon as we call it cancer, people go, oh, like, it's like, it just is like this nail in the coffin. Oh, I guess this is it. You know, it's kind of that, because cancer is so deadly kind of idea, right? But it's really curious if instead the doctor said, for some reason there's some cells in this organ that are replicating at a strange rate and we're going to look into why that's happening. You know, people would go, oh, that is interesting. I wonder what that is all about, right? But as soon as we name it, it's the same thing as saying a child is ADHD or something. And not that I want to open a can of worms there, but
I was just
going to
say the same thing. It's the label.
if you say to someone, you know, for some reason my child's struggling to pay attention in school, right? Then you can look at it and say, huh? Well, maybe he's eating too much sugar. Maybe he's bored and has a crappy teacher. Maybe he needs more exercise. Maybe he's not getting enough sleep. Maybe he can't breathe out of his right nostril that causes, like, who knows? Because all we know is that he's struggling to pay attention in school and sit still. As soon as we label him, which was what, again, this left brain loves to do, let's just label it, and then we don't have to think about it anymore. And it's the same with getting a cancer diagnosis. As soon as you get a cancer diagnosis, it immediately puts you in this strange passive role that says, oh, cancer's got me. Like, it's a thing. It's not a thing. It's just, it's a name of a situation you might be in right now, that this is sort of what's going on in your body. It's like saying, you know, it's like saying that constipation is a diagnosis. Like, oh, well, I guess I'm done. It's like, no. Go and do something about it. Fix it. Resolve it. The body will heal. You know, but as soon as we have these big diagnoses, we just think, oh, I guess we can't do anything about it. It's just who I am. It's just hereditary. I knew it was going to happen eventually. You know, for a lot of people, it's almost a relief because they've been so afraid of getting it.
Now
they
go,
oh,
now I've got it. That happened in your family. That happened in your family.
Absolutely. And,
yeah.
And again, it's so interesting because the... Yeah, it did happen in my family for sure. Like, my mom lived in fear of getting cancer her whole life. But I'm not sure that mom would have done anything different either. You know,
mm-hmm.
She was pretty entrenched in that. See, the interesting thing that I remembered my point right before the break about the left brain, because that's what you asked me about, was the mathematical
shift
to healing. And the hard thing about living in that left brain and doing everything according to what society thinks we should be doing is we also think that we can explain why we want to do everything to people. So let's say someone says, well, why would you ever do that? Doesn't make any sense. Our left brain says, oh, okay, yeah, I should be able to justify this. I should be able to explain this to people. But the truth is, when you just follow a calling, when you follow that lift or drop of the heart, you know, why you do want to do something or don't want to do something, it's not justifiable. You can't explain it. It's not a left-brain thing. Like, the nice thing is for me, like, my family and inner circle of friends, they're pretty used to that me saying, guess what, I'm going to do this, and they go, really? And they don't even think to ask why. Because normally my answer would be, I don't know. You know, 3 weeks ago I did this, you ever heard of a Tough Mudder obstacle race?
No.
It's this crazy obstacle course. It's a 16-kilometer obstacle course. It's up in north of Barrie. There was one in Toronto. They're all over the world, but there was one north of Barrie, up Mount St. Louis Moonstone. We climbed the mountain 5 times. It was the most exhausting thing I've ever done in my entire life. And then there's like 20-plus obstacles that are created by the British Special Forces, everything from jumping into huge dumpsters full of ice water, getting electrical shock, crawling under barbed wire, climbing vertical walls. It's the strangest thing in the world for anyone to actually pay to do, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I saw the video of this, and something in me said, you've got to do this. And I came home, and I told my family, I'm like, I got to do this Tough Mudder. And a friend of mine was doing it. It's a team thing. Like, you go in as a team, and you help each other and everything. And they all just look at me like, huh. Because there's nothing they can say, because they know that if I feel it as a calling, it's going to happen. And even as I was training, because I'm not that fit, like, this is meant for people who are crazy fit, and I thought, no, I'm supposed to do this. But the most, and so then I just trust on faith that I'm supposed to do it. And whatever comes along in the process is just meant to be. So it's kind of fascinating, right? My life becomes really interesting when you follow callings, because you have absolutely no idea what's coming ever, and you can never explain it to anyone, so everyone else is just watching too, because they can't actually criticize or do anything about it, because I go, I don't know why I'm doing it. And the most amazing thing about doing this mudder, it was 3 weeks ago, is it was terrifying. Like, the idea of going into these obstacles, like in jumping into ice water. I hate cold water. To get shocked, to crawl under barbed wire, to crawl through muck, and like all these different things, climb the mountain that many times, to disappoint my team by being too slow. All these fears. By the time I showed up that day, I wasn't allowed to have any fear. Because if I was going to think about whether I was going to jump into the ice water, there's no point going. So I had to have this whole process that happened for months ahead of time to slowly get rid of all those hooks that I had into all these fears. And by the time I showed up that day, I had to be without any fear, or else there was no point doing it. I would never have gotten through it.
Right.
And so it's so fascinating to me to actually, so now today, and it was so funny, my family all came to watch, like my sisters and my dad and my stepmom and stuff, and every so often they'd look at me and they'd say, are you done? Like, you should just skip this one. This one's too scary. You don't want to climb that one. That's too scary. And I'm looking at them like, you don't get it. I have no fear today. Tomorrow I may have fear. Today I have no fear. And it was a fascinating thing to even experience that. And that's the coolest thing about listening to that little voice inside that says, do this. And it doesn't have to be anything crazy like doing a Tough Mudder, but it could be something, it's always interesting when it's outside your comfort zone. Because
right.
Then you actually go on a journey. You actually have something juicy and interesting going on in your life. And then all of a sudden, like for example, about 3 years ago, I got rooked into doing a marathon. I never actually did the marathon because of tornadoes hitting our town and weird stuff, and my training got all kiboshed. But I got convinced to do a marathon. And I was not a runner at all. I mean, if I ran like 100 feet, my knees would hurt, my back would hurt. I couldn't even move. But what was interesting is choosing to do this marathon and feeling called to do it in the end. All of a sudden, interesting people started showing up in my life. That whole, you know, when the student is ready, the teacher appears. And all of a sudden, people started showing up in my life who could show me how to run naturally or barefoot or whatever and do all these things. And my life became infinitely more interesting because I had this strange calling to do this thing, which then led to doing Tough Mudders, which then led to teaching barefoot running, which then led to this, which then led to this. And now I'm part of this bizarre and interesting community of fitness people, which never would have happened otherwise. I would have just
right.
been sitting at home, you know, despairing that my life was boring or something. And there's just small little choices.
The other important thing is we don't try things. Like sometimes it leads us to knowing that, no, it's not really something we want to pursue. For example, and I'm going to share something from your book in a minute, but for me, I had a lifelong dream of wanting to play the piano. And you know what I'm going to share. But so I started taking my daughter. I thought, oh, great, we'll do it together. And the piano teacher lives two doors away, and we've been going to piano. And you know, I have a hard time. I don't even push her to practice because I know it's not her biggest thing, and I've given her the choice if she wants to stop piano, because really what's the big deal that she sings Silent Night at the Christmas dinner when she's 25? Like, if it's not her passion, but she's enjoying
right.
it. But I've decided that I really have no desire now to play the piano, which I thought I did, and it was this unmet calling, and I have this dream of wanting to play the piano. So I think if you actually listen to your heart and attempt those things, sometimes it's not even, it's just to say that, hey, no, just putting you back on the path. No, it isn't really what you want to do, but you need to experience it. But I do want to share this, Katrina, because this is one of my gems of the 900 in your book. But about listening to our voice. So, because I think the callers will really, or the listeners will really appreciate this. This is the conversation between the heart and the head. The heart says, this is your heart, I like to play the piano. Head, you can't play the piano. Heart, but I'd like to try. Head, we can't afford it. Heart, we can afford lessons for the kids. Head, it's important for their growth and well-roundedness. It's just frivolous for you. Heart, I think I enjoy playing the piano. Head, when are you going to do this? You don't have time to get done what needs to get done now. Between making supper for the family and running the kids to the events, when would you have time? You can't expect them to feed themselves and just so you can go off and spend time on something unimportant. Heart, I think it would be good for me. Head, would you really practice? When is that going to happen? It's just a waste of money, and if you don't practice, and where would you use it anyway? It's not like you're going to be a concert pianist. And then you go on to say, are we cruel or what? The heart cannot justify its decision. It simply speaks the desires of the soul, but it can't match the endless arguments that the mind can come up with. And that is so true.
I know, aren't we just ruthless?
It's amazing. You know, one of the other ones I have to share, because I know we're coming to the end of our time, which I cannot believe. You're going to have to come on again if if you will, because I have so much more I want to cover. But I have to share this one because this one is, I share this with everybody. And it's the part about listening to our, you know, the lift or drop and listening to our heart again. And it's the part where you talk about the school. And Katrina says, for example, let's say someone calls and wants you, I think we can all relate to this, and wants you to take squares to the bake sale at the school. As soon as they ask, your heart immediately falls. You don't have time for this. You're already maxed out. But everyone's parents are contributing. It's the least you can do for the fundraiser. You don't want to be the one who says no. So you say, sure, how many would you like me to bring? I mean, and we do this. And we can see when I work with clients with illness, and we can see that these things build up. They make us resentful. They bury our feelings. They put our real, true emotions or our true feelings down, 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 and we keep suppressing them. And that's what we talked earlier about, that, you know, quiet depression or that despair. It then turns into despair because we're not listening to ourselves. We're suppressing. We're not speaking our truth. Yeah. Our heart says, no way, that's the last thing I want to do is bring squares to the bake sale. So we have about 10 minutes left, Katrina. What would you like to share for our listeners before we wrap up for the day? I know we've talked about a lot.
The one thing that I really work on right now in my own life, too, is that it's really actually kind of figuring out, like, whose life are we actually living? You know, it's interesting, like, 'cause if we're not listening to our heart, if we're not actually following our own path, you know, we kind of have to ask ourselves, well, whose path are we on? You know, we have this thing that says we're supposed to make squares for the bake sale. We're supposed to do this. We're supposed to act this way. But what's really strange is, I mean, there's 6 billion people on the planet, some odd, and we're each supposed to do what we're supposed to do. And it's sort of fascinating to me because I still fall into those traps. Like, I mean, some are obvious. It's kind of like some things you figure out and you never do that again. But then something new comes up that's slightly different shade of something. You know, and it's sort of, it's like, oh, this feels so familiar. I know I'm, you know. But it's sort of interesting to say, you know, but what if this is me? What if I don't want to do that? What if I don't like doing that? What if I don't appreciate this, you know, whatever? if that's who I truly am, then that's what I'm supposed to be doing. Like, it's just it's sort of that funny thing that says, you know, if you're not being you, who are you being?
Mm-hmm.
And I still wrestle with that because, I mean, sometimes we say things like following our heart and authentic self. And I know for me, like, I've said it so many times, it's gotten old even for me. I don't even want to say it anymore. But the truth is, whose life are we living? Like, who's actually driving our boat? Because if we're not doing it, you know, a friend of mine was just killed a couple days ago, you know, just an accident on her farm.
Oh, wow.
And we forget how quickly it's over. You know, it's like life is not about meeting the expectations of the PTA at the school. There's no way that's what it's about. It's not even about meeting the expectations of our family. I spend time with my kids and my family because I love spending time with them. It brings me great joy. And I don't spend time with people who I do not enjoy. And that's
right.
It's not,
you know, I think
about doing the right thing.
Right.
Sorry,
it goes back to that, you know, resentment, you know, that's been associated with cancer, for example. If we spend our time, you know, bringing squares to the bake sale when it's the last thing we want to do, or doing something for somebody, or having lunch with a friend, and then we do become resentful because we really don't want to be there. So we need to keep that in check and really listen.
And realize that some people love baking squares. Like,
and
that's their language
the
of love.
Yes.
So, I mean, that's what they love to do. And those are the people who made that rule. Like, I'm a Rotarian. You know, and it's fascinating because there's 1,000 different ways to kind of give within Rotary. And it's interesting. Some people like doing this. Some people do like doing that. And I always have to catch myself saying, no, 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 this isn't what you do. This isn't how you contribute to Rotary. This is maybe what everyone else is doing, but it's not how you contribute. And then I realize that, hey, actually, I like having exchange students living with me. Oh, and actually, I like doing that. But I don't like doing these other 8 things that everybody else is doing. You know, they like doing it. So they assume that I like doing it, and then people like to guilt you into doing it because they like, you know what I mean? It's the same with the baking the squares. If you love doing it, right on. Why not?
That's
you know,
right.
And if you don't, great. Do something else.
That you love to do it, and yes, exactly. You know, Katrina, I'm just going to wrap up on my end with something I want to share with our listeners, and then you can feel free to add to it or share anything. I sort of came up with what I call, and this is just my personal sort of ideas about this, and I'm so it's not written in stone medically or anything like that, but this is sort of what I call a cancer profile, and I got most of this from your book and you know, some from Anita's, but I'm just going to run down really quick this little list because I really want our listeners to look at themselves and see, am I doing this? And maybe it's a wake-up call to start living more authentically and to waking up to your what would bring you joy. So what I have here is they're people pleasers, you know, versus people who aren't so concerned with others' opinions. We have depression, which is an epidemic out there, despair, feeling unfulfilled, that empty void. I see this in coaching a lot. You know, I'm just missing something. I don't know what it's all about. Living through others, our children or spouses or the PTA or whatever, never saying no to anyone, not speaking their truth, not asking for help. That's a big one for women. Always smiling, always trying to please others, you know, the quiet depression we talked of, being selfless, swallowing your words, that was your, you know, swallowing your words to avoid making waves, that one's huge. That, again, is that repression. Exhaustion, depression, inner turmoil, overly concerned with other people's needs, opinions, expectations, not sharing your feelings because you might bother someone, tend to put everyone's needs over their own. And here's one that I really like that is that from your book, and this was your quote. You know, cancer patients who got better had unique personalities, were not afraid to stand out from the crowd. And I would add to that because, yes, this way they're allowing their own universal life force and the intelligence to flow through them, going back to how I see that as energetically, right? So that's just some of my, but I really wanted to share that because that was a lot of what I got from your book, and I thought those were, you know, really good check-in points. Would you agree?
Yeah, like what I would add to that is that, I mean, I agree with everything you said for sure, and because the one interesting thing about, you know, spontaneous healings, the whole concept of spontaneous means that actually that we think spontaneous means that it happens all at once, but spontaneous actually means that it comes from the inside, that for some reason something just heals from the inside. That's what actually spontaneous healing means. So if you imagine that we have our soul, our life force, our energy, whatever, or even if you imagine blood flow in the body or lymphatic flow or the breath or whatever, our body is always flowing. So, and the same with our thoughts and our emotions and all these kind of things. Every time something happens in our life that goes, no, can't do that, shouldn't do that, you know, or guilt, or we end up doing something we don't want to be doing, or all these kind of things, you can imagine some kind of energetic blockage happening in the body, right? It's sort of like you have this hope and dream, you're all excited, and then someone goes, no, you can't do that, and it just like, just puts a lid on it and just stops. And then and once you have that stop, it's like you can't think about anything else either because that's what's supposed to be happening, and it just stops right there. And people talk about energy blockages and all that kind of things and blockages in the body. So how spontaneous healing happens, as far as I understand, is that when we start to look at the things that we want to do in our life and we start looking at the things that are stopping us from doing the things we love, and we actually heal those things and make changes and do things differently and speak our mind gently. It doesn't mean becoming crazy. It just means being honest. Then slowly those blockages leave, and all of a sudden we can think again, and we can go down that path again, and things start to flow again, and creativity starts to flow again. Everything starts to move, and then the body heals because the physical body is connected to all of that. So this is where when we can, and it's so simple when we just simply look at the things that block us or the things we truly want to do, and we stay the course and we say, nope, this really matters. It matters to my mental health, my physical health, my emotional health. This matters more than anything else. And then all of a sudden, you start sleeping better, and then all of a sudden you start eating differently because you're kind of looking for different things, and all of a sudden, you know, that eczema you've had for 20 years is gone, and all the, you know, things start to flow in the body, the lymph starts to move, everything starts to change. But I think that's that very subtle shift in changing our perception, changing what we believe matters, and changing about what we believe we deserve in life and how happy we actually could be every day.
And our pecking order. We didn't even get to cover that.
We haven't even got to pecking order.
Oh, the pecking order. You're going to have to come on for another show for sure. Now, Katrina, it's been my pleasure today to have you on. Where can folks get their books? I know, you know, you can get it at my website. That's where I got mine, which is shopwithmaggie.com. And if you click on partner stores under I for the Canadians, the chapter's Indigo with free shipping, that's where I got it. But I know it's on Amazon, and I think, is there a resource at your website as well?
Well, you can, yeah, definitely on chapters and Amazon. And the other option would be to go to I can be contacted through East Street Station. Like, that's the easiest place, like Katrina at East Street Station. Pardon me. And if people would like, I also published a magazine called The Journey through the station last year, and it was all about how to actually do this work. You know, how do you actually figure all this inside stuff out? So if people want, I could send them a copy of my book plus a copy of this magazine, which is like $5. But so that's another option. I can ship them out of the station as well.
Okay,
so.
Awesome. I want a copy of the magazine.
Okay.
I'm in. Sign me up. And the other thing is I just want to let the callers know because, you know, there's so much sickness and cancer happening out there. And I mean, we're not everyone's exposed to it in some way. So I know you do you could skip the cancer counseling coaching. And obviously with technology, we can do that over the phone. So I want our listeners to know that you do that and that they could contact you. Is that correct?
Yep, for sure. Yep. And it's easiest just to do it through the station, like at eaststreetstation.ca. My email is just katrina@eaststreetstation.ca. And then we can set up Skype or phone or whatever.
Wow.
It's easy.
What a great service. And I know you had help from a man named you call Jim, and that's a whole other story. But it's just wonderful to see the how we can serve each other in the world. And it's been my pleasure to have you here today. Is there anything you need to say to feel complete before we end the show?
No, I think it's been great. I really appreciate you
too.
Having me on.
Oh, I'm so glad I have. And I encourage everyone to get the book. Have an amazing week. Live in love. Live fearlessly. Remember your joys. Lift or drop, and go make it happen. We'll talk to you next week when we have Sandy Boucher on again, the author of two books and inspirational speaker. Bye, everyone.